Good evening to everybody. I assume people can hear me, and you can see me. I don't see you necessarily. Yes, loud and clear. Okay. That text is going to be a little bit. This is a little bit of a new experience, so I'm getting used to the text and the picture and the shir. We're going to begin. Parshat Vayetze, I've suggested that if you have a Tanakh available, it would be helpful, but I've also provided all of you with a source page so that we can work off the text in the source page. Most of the sources that we'll work with are there. What I'd like to focus on this evening is actually almost a what seems to be at first glance, when you look at the parasha, almost a side issue, and yet it's a theme that runs through the whole parasha from beginning to end, and seems therefore to take on a greater significance than we would have otherwise thought. And specifically, I'm referring to the role of the angels and the role that they play in the story of Yaakov. Yaakov's story as he runs away from his brother, as he runs toward Glavan, Yaakov's dream, which he has at the beginning of the parasha, which he sees the ladder and angels running up and down, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Later on in the course of the parasha, he has another dream, and then at the very end, we'll find another reference to angels. So the reference to these malachim seems to carry through the parasha from one end to the other, rather than just a casual reference at the beginning. And so I thought I would dedicate tonight's shiur to an exploration of what and who these malachim are, what role they play, and what significance they have, not only for Yaakov, but in general. All through Tanakh, is there a specific role here? So if you have your source page with you, and if not, the reference there is to download the pages. You can also open up a Chumash or Tanakh. We're going to start with Perek Chavchet, Pasuk Yudbet, Yaakov on his journey to Lavan, running away from Esav. Pasuk says, Vayachalom v'hine sulam mutzav arza, v'rasho magia hashamayma. He has a dream. And very famous, well-known dream, of course, the ladder that goes up to heaven, grounded in the ground, mutzav arza, with the top of the ladder in the sky. V'hine malachei Elokim olim v'yordim bo. And behold, there are malachei Elokim going up and going down. And these angels seem to play almost a symbolic role in this dream. Because immediately the verse, I'm just opening up a Chumash to look for the text, the next verse says, and you don't have it on the source page, so if you don't have a Tanakh, just listen, follow along audibly, V'hinei Hashem nitzav alav. The next verse says that God stood over him, over Yaakov. V'yomar ani Hashem, and then God speaks to Yaakov. So the malachim aren't necessarily speaking to Yaakov. They're not playing the role here, for example, that the Malach plays in the burning bush. When Moshe comes to the burning bush and he sees Malach Hashem, he sees an angel in the midst of this fire, and then God speaks to him, and some of the Mephoshim say that God speaks to him through the agency of a Malach. Here, these Malachim that are going up and down the ladder are not there to speak to Yaakov, because in addition to the angels, we have Hashem Nitzav Alav, God standing over him. So the angels seem to have a more symbolic role, going up and going down, and what role they play in this dream. And that's the first time we encounter these malachim, these angels. So of course we are familiar with Rashi's comment, and Rashi explains, and you have it on the source page, source number 2, that the purpose of these malachim are olim tchilav achakach yodim. Rashi says they're first going up and then they're coming down. Malachim shelivuhu ba'aretz en yotzim chutz la'aretz ve'alu l'rakia v'yardu malachei chutz la'aretz l'avoto. That the angels that traditionally, regularly accompanied Yaakov in the land of Israel, they were leaving, they're not there. They're the ones who are going up to Shemayim, that's why it's Olim. And the Malachim that are going to now be accompanying Yaakov on his journey to Chutz La'aretz, on his journey to the house of Lavan, they are the ones that are Yordim, they're the ones that are coming down to Yaakov. So, when Rashi understands the expression Olim V'Yordim, is not that the angels are going up and coming down as if they're going up and down an escalator and riding it endlessly. It's not the same angels going up and coming down, but rather, there are different angels that are going up, and other angels that are coming down. But again, no explanation is given what, other than the fact that Yaakov is at the moment leaving Eretz Yisrael on his journey to Lavan, although he's not at the border per se, but he is on that journey, other than that, there really isn't an explanation in depth as to what role these malachim play. And if that was all we had, if that was the only place in which we encountered these malachim, then we would have to explore the dream locally and ask the question what symbolic image they play in this picture. But, as I think it's clear, there's much more to these malachim than just the fact that they appear at the beginning of the parasha. And it's interesting to note also that they appear in the beginning in the context of a dream. He sees them by a chalom. So it's not even clear that he's actually seeing real angels. He could be dreaming, and he most likely is dreaming about these angels. On the other hand, and here, again, if you're following in the source page, we're going to jump to source number 3 in a text in the Tanakh, but it jumps to the very end of the parsha. And it's significant that it's the very last psukim of the parsha itself. Yaakov is now on his way back from the house of Lavan. He has stayed in Lavan's house for the better part of 20 years, 14 of which working for his wives, Rachel and Leah. Of course, the story of the 6 years in which he worked for him for his payment, and then the challenge of leaving the house of Lavan. And at the very end, on his way back, I'm going to read a couple of psukim that are not on the source page, so if you have a text, please follow along to the end of Perek Lamed Aleph. Yaakov has a... Lavan catches up to him, Lavan encounters him, challenges him, they have a parting of the ways. And then the pasuk says, "Vayashkem Lavan baboker, vayenashek levanav." Lavan gets up the next morning, kisses his children, meaning his grand, v'liv notav, his daughters, his sons, vayavarechatem. He blesses them, vayelech vayashov Lavan limkomo. And then Lavan goes home to his place. And at that point, Yaakov has now, for the first time since he started this journey, he is now free and unencumbered by Lavan's presence or Lavan's shadow. And the next pasuk is a Yaakov halach ledarko. Yaakov is now beginning his own journey. These psukim are now on your source page, source number 3. And on his way home, vayifgu ubo malachei Elokim. He is met by angels of God. So it's as if he's, we don't know if it's necessarily the same angels with which the parsha began, but it's interesting that this entire episode of Yaakov's journey is bracketed on both sides by malachim. He sees the malachim at the beginning of the parsha in the form of his dream, and at the end of the parsha, on his way home, as he's about to enter into the land of Israel, he again encounters malachim, angels. Vayifgu b'malachei Elokim. Vayomer Yaakov kasher ra'am. Yaakov, when he saw these angels, understood their significance, and he said, "Machane Elokim zeh, this is the camp of God." Vayikra shem ha'makom ahu Machanayim, and he named the place Machanayim. And if we look at Rashi, Rashi makes a number of interesting observations. First of all, Rashi immediately does links us to, links this story and this encounter with the Malachim to the first encounter with the Malachim. In other words, what I've suggested to you over the last few minutes, that these two episodes are connected in some way, and that in fact the angels are playing a substantial role here beyond just a symbolic one, is told to us in this Rashi. When Rashi says, "Vayifku'u b'malachei Elokim," which angels are we talking about? Rashi says, "Malachim shel Eretz Yisrael ba'u likrato le'lavoto ba'aretz." The angels of Eretz Yisrael have now come to greet him. Meaning, Rashi playing on his comment at the beginning of the parasha. The same angels. When he left Israel, the angels of Eretz Yisrael went up to Shemayim. And the angels from Chutzlatz came to escort him to his journey abroad. Now that he's returning to the land of Israel, it's logical to assume that the angels that had left him when he exited the land have now returned to greet him, to escort him, l'lavoto, into the land of Israel. In other words, what Rashi is saying, and this I think is really the significant piece of it, the implication of Rashi is that the malachim at the beginning of the parasha were not a dream. They were real. Because Rashi says the same angels that left him, the same malachim Eretz Yisrael that left him when he starts, have to now escort him back when he returns. So even though Yaakov saw it in a dream state, that's not because they were just symbolic, he was dreaming about it and they happened to be symbolic images in his dream. They were real malachim. And the group of malachim who had escorted him in Eretz Yisrael left, another group of malachim escorted him in Eretz Yisrael, in Chutzlaretz joined him. Now that he's returning, vayifku'u bo malachei Elokim. He's not encountering these angels in a dream. He's meeting them. And he's meeting them in a machaneh. A machaneh is not a summer camp, obviously. Machaneh in Tanakh has one meaning only, and it is always consistently used in that context. A machaneh is a military camp. It is a camp in formation. Much as Machaneh Yisrael, the camp of Israel, was a journey through the desert, was a military camp ready for a military engagement. So Yaakov sees these angels, and he declares, Machaneh Elokimze. This is a camp of angels. Why he needs a camp, we will see in a moment. But clearly, he understood that these were real angels, and they were coming to escort him back into Eretz Yisrael. Says Rashi, they're the same angels that left him when he left Eretz Yisrael in the first place. So that's one implication of this Rashi. That these malachim, that the dream that he has at the beginning of the parasha is not just a dream, it's actually a real phenomenon. There were real malachim leaving and malachim coming, and now he's meeting those malachim on his return to the land of Israel. That's number one. Number two, the word machanayim caught Rashi's attention and should catch our attention as well, because machanayim is a formation of the plural of the word machaneh, but a unique plural. In Hebrew, it denotes two, much as yad, two hands, is yadayim. Rego, two feet, is reglayim. Right? The ayim ending is a form of double. So machanayim means the double camp, two camps. What are the two camps? Vayifku'u bo malachei Elokim, he meets the angels, and he declares them machane Elokim, the camp of God, and then says machanayim, it's two camps. Where's the second camp? So Rashi immediately informs us that there are two camps. Why? Because there were two sets of angels. The Machane Shel Chutz La'aretz Shebao Imo Adkan V'Shel Eretz Yisrael Shebao Likrato. The camp of the angels from Chutz La'aretz that had been with him up until now, have they will be leaving him. So that's one camp. And the new camp of the Malachim coming to escort him into Eretz Yisrael, that's the second camp. So Rashi again has linked this story to the opening of the parasha, to the double camp of angels going and coming, saying here if we have a double camp of angels, malachim, then they play the same role, and that's why we have machanayim. So this is Rashi. Now I'm going to go one step further, and we're going to go into one more verse, which is the opening pasuk of next week's parasha. I'm not sure if that's fair, but we're going to do it anyway. We're going to just step on the toes of next week's parasha with one phrase, because the opening of next week's parasha is, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefanav. El Esav Achiv Artis Seir Steyado. Yaakov sends Malachim before him to meet his brother Esav. And Rashi there says two words. Malachim Mamash. Literally angels. What is Rashi telling me? Why does Rashi have to say Malachim Mamash? It says Malachim. Well, what else could it mean? So here, I think what Rashi is trying to do is link the beginning of Parshat Vayishlach to the end of Parshat Vayetze. There's a break, there's a pause, there's a paragraph break, there's a section break. For us, there's an entire parsha, there's an entire week break. We don't necessarily always realize that. But what you have here, I think, is Rashi's comment is designed to, or is intended to avoid a misinterpretation. What's the misinterpretation? In Tanakh, the word malach can mean two things, of course. It can refer to angels, as we've been discussing up until now. Malachei Elohim can mean angels in a literal sense, literally, what we would call angels. We don't necessarily know what they are, but that's a subject for a different shir. But the word malach can also just mean a messenger. Much as a person can send a malach, meaning a messenger, to do his bidding. One of the Nevi'im is called Malachi. And it's actually the last of the Nevi'im. And Chazal say Malachi wasn't his name, but rather that was his title. His title was My Malach, My Messenger, because that's what a Nevi is. It's a messenger. Similarly, you have the beginning of Parshat Shoftim. You have a reference to Malach Hashem, Vayavo Malach Hashem in Gilgal, al Abochim. A Malach comes to the people to chastise them over the beginning of the challenge of their backsliding in idolatry in the beginning of Parshat of Sefer Shoftim. And there too, we could interpret that either as an angel or the traditional role. Whose role was it traditionally to chastise the people, to criticize them if they went off the path of the Torah and if they worshipped idols or did what the Torah, violated the covenant of the Torah? It was the role of the Nevi'im. And so Chazal almost unanimously understand that word malach to refer to a Navi or a Kohen Gadol, in that case Pinchas. So the word malach can refer to a regular messenger of flesh and blood. Here Rashi wants to tell me malachim mamish. So either he's telling me, one possibility is that don't confuse this malach with the previous parsha of malachim. Before we were dealing with malachim in the angelic sense of the term, now we're dealing with malach of flesh and blood. But I don't think that's Rashi's intent. I think what Rashi's intending to tell us is exactly the opposite. That the malachim that Yaakov sent to Esav are malachim mamish. They're real angels. Why? Not Nevi'im, not shlichim, not messengers, not people who are part of his camp or part of his entourage or household, but rather malachim. Why? What leads Rashi to that interpretation? Specifically because it comes from the heels of the camp that Yaakov had just encountered. He had just encountered Machane Elohim, the camp of God, by encountering the Malachim, who were Malachai Eretz Yisrael, says Rashi, there to greet him. So Rashi understood that Yaakov was not only meeting these angels, but that he was actually commanding them. He was instructing them. He was incorporating them into his battle plan, into his encounter with Esav. So if we look at the levels of engagement, or the levels in which the various ways in which the Torah presents Yaakov's relationship to these malachim, the beginning of Parshat Vayetze, he's encountering malachim in a dream state, via chalom. And in this chalom, he sees the name Malachei Elohim. And it could lead us to the interpretation that this was all a dream, this was all a nevuah. He didn't actually encounter real malachim, they just have some kind of symbolic message for him. But that's not the case, says Rashi, because at the end of the parsha, when he returns to Israel, he encounters the very same malachim. And we have this double camp reference, meaning, says Rashi, that one camp of Malachim was leaving and the other camp was coming. So clearly that's camp of real angels. And then Rashi says, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim, Yaakov takes these angels, incorporates them into his camp, if you will, and we'll come back to that issue in a little while, but incorporates them into his context, and then he instructs them. Then he sends them on a mission. Then he sends Malachim Mamish, angels, to greet Yaakov, to greet Esav. And we're left with the quandary of this role that these Malachim play in this story. Powerful role. They start the story, they end the story. And who and what are these Malachim, and what role do they play? That's essentially the introduction to the Shir, the beginning. And we're going to now begin a journey of trying to understand who and what these Malachim are, what role they play, not only in the story of Yaakov, but overall in the story of, overall in Tanakh. Let me take you completely out of context, away from the story of Yaakov for a moment, and take you to an episode that happens hundreds of years later. But it's an episode in which we see the role of these Malachim again, and I happen to enjoy this particular episode in a certain way. I often refer to it as my favorite little episode in Tanakh. But you have it. You have a couple of excerpts, a couple of psukim from this story in source number 5. The story is in Malachim Bet. It's the story of Elisha. Elisha, as you know, is the student, disciple, Navi of Eliyahu HaNavi. Elisha is the personality or persona whose presence carries through the beginning of Sefer Malachim Bet. And in this particular chapter, the context is that there is an enemy king by the name of an empire called Aram, and the king of Aram is trying to wage war with Israel. But he has a problem. His problem is that every time he tries to bring his army in secret to a location from which he can then ambush the army of Israel, Elisha calls up the king of Israel on some kind of a hotline that they had between them, and he says to the king of Israel, don't take your army to that particular location or that particular hill, because the king of Aram's army is there lying in wait. And in such a manner, Elisha is essentially the intelligence service for the king of Israel. He's better than a satellite. And the king of Aram is confused. So he even goes so far as to suspect perhaps there's a spy within his kingdom. They begin to explain to the king of Aram that there's no spy, but rather the king of Israel has an individual by the name of Elisha, and you have to be careful. Because, and I will read you the pasuk, Malachim Bet Perek Vav. So they said to him, Lo Adoni HaMelech, ki Elisha HaNavi asher bi Yisrael yagid laMelech Yisrael et hadvarim asher yitidaber b'chadam mishkavecha. O king of Israel, O king of Aram, your issue is with Elisha. Elisha can tell the king of Israel the secrets, the innermost secrets that you whisper in the privacy of your bedchamber. The problem is, if you want to deal with Israel, you've got to take out their secret weapon. And so Elisha the king of Aram decides to send an ambush against the secret weapon for Israel, namely, specifically, Elisha. He sends, in the next pasuk it says, Pasuk Yedalad, Vayishlach shama susim v'rechev v'chayor kaved. Against Elisha, the king of Aram sends horses and chariots and a great army. Vayavo laila v'akifu ala ir. In the middle of the night they come and they surround the city, they surround the hill in which Elisha's house rests. And from here, the next pasuk you have on your source page is source number 5. Vayashkem misharet isha elokim lakum. The next morning, the servant of Elisha, the disciple of Elisha, gets up, and he goes, lakum vayetze, and he goes outside. And when he goes outside, he goes, I don't know, when he went out to get the morning paper or something, he went up early. And he sees the entire area surrounded by a great army. Yesus v'rechav, and horses and chariots, all of the army of Aram. So the Na'ar comes to Elisha and says to him, Aha, Adoni, Eichana aseh. Whoa, my master, Elisha. What are we going to do? So here's the picture. Elisha, Anavi, living on a hill or in a house with his disciple, with his Na'ar, walks outside in the morning, and there he sees a great army. Army of Aram. Horses, chariots, thousands upon thousands. So Elisha turns to his disciple and he says to him, don't be afraid. Ki rabim asher itanu me'asher otam. For we outnumber them. Now, you can only imagine what's going through the mind of Elisha's Na'ar. They're surrounded by horses, chariots, and thousands upon thousands of soldiers. He turns to his master, to them, Elisha and his servant, against the hordes of Aram's army. He turns to Elisha, and Elisha says to him, don't worry, we outnumber them. Say anything else. Say God will be with us. Say I have a plan. Say we'll miraculously get out of here. Whatever you want to say. But to suggest that we outnumber them, that's odd. Then Elisha begins to pray. And what would we expect that prayer to be? We could expect that prayer to be, God save me, Ana Hashem Oshiana, God save me from my enemies. Elisha's prayer is unique. He prays and he says, Vayomar Hashem, Pekach na et einav v'yireh. All he prays is for God to open up the eyes of his lad, so that he may see what Elisha already sees. Elisha doesn't have to pray for victory here. He doesn't have to pray for God to save him, because he knows exactly how God is going to save him. He already knows that he outnumbers the enemy. The only problem is that his Na'ar doesn't know that we outnumber the enemy, because his Na'ar is blind. He's blind because he only has eyes. He can't see without beyond what his eyes see. And so God has to open up those eyes to see what Elisha sees. God opens up the eyes of the Na'ar, and he sees. And behold, the mountain was filled with horses and chariots of fire around Elisha. Those horses and chariots of fire are not the enemies. They are the horses and chariots of the army of the Ribbono Shel Olam, the horses and chariots of the Malachim, who are at Elisha's command. And in the rest of the story, Elisha then commands them and instructs them, and they are saved miraculously. But at that moment, the issue isn't an esoteric symbolic gesture. The issue isn't some kind of miracle of divine providence, create Yamsu style. The issue is simply that Elisha can see that which the Na'ar can't. Elisha sees the Malachim that are there with him to protect him, and the Na'ar can't. And the moment the Na'ar opens up his eyes and he can see, he realizes that there are horses and chariots of fire with which Elisha will command an army. What army is this? This is the army of the Ribbono Shel Olam. This is the Tzva Hashem, if you will. But literally, Tzva Hashem. This is an army of angels. If we understand this concept, and we'll come back to its application to Yaakov in a moment, if we understand this, I'll show you another episode in the Chumash, which we can then begin to understand in Tanakh in more depth. It's an encounter between Yehoshua and a malach, an angel, just as they are about to embark on the campaign, the first campaign in the land of Israel, when they first enter into the land, against the city of Jericho. And of course we know that Jericho falls because the walls are taken out by trumpets and hakafot around the walls, and ultimately with the Aron and the Kohanim, and a process that clearly indicates that the Ribbono Shel Olam was going to fight this battle and take the walls out of commission for Yoshua. In the beginning, before the battle takes place, the introduction, the battle plan itself, if you will, is given to Yehoshua through the following episode. Source number 6. Vayi biyot Yehoshua biyericho. Yehoshua is encamped at Jericho. Vayisai nav vaya. He lifts up his eyes and he sees. Vinei ish omed limegdo v'charbo shlufa biyado. He sees a man standing opposite him with a sword drawn. You're the general of the army. You're camped in a military formation, in a machaneh. And in the middle of your camp, suddenly there's a man who's a complete stranger, you've never seen him before, and he's standing there with a sword. What's your thought? Immediately. Who is this guy, and how did he get here? Vayelech Yeshua elav vayomer lo, halanu ata im letzareinu. Are you for us or against us? Are you friend or foe? Vayomer. So the malach, so this ish, up until now we think he's an ish. We'll see in a moment that he's not. But he responds and he says, no, not so. Ki ani sar tzva Hashem. I am the ministering angel of the army of God. Sar is a ministering angel. Tzva Hashem, of the army of God. God has an army. An army needs a general. This malach serves as the general of God's army. Atam mati, I have come now. Vayipol Yehoshua al panav arza. Vayishtachu, Yeshua falls on his face. Vayomer lo, ma adoni medaber al avdo. And he says, what if my master speak to a servant? Suddenly Yeshua's tone changes. Clearly he realizes he's not dealing with an enemy combatant. He's dealing with a malach of Hashem, the Sar Tzva Hashem. Vayomer Sar Tzva Hashem al Yeshua. This Sar Tzva Hashem says to Yeshua, take take your shoes off from your feet, because the land upon which you stand is holy ground. And of course the parallel to Moshe at the burning bush is clear. Moshe also sees a malach who then instructs him on how he is to go back to Egypt to take Bnei Yisrael out of Egypt. Yeshua sees this malach, who is now going to instruct him on how he's going to conquer Jericho, what the battle plan is for Jericho, how he's going to surround the city, 7 hakafot, over 7 days, blow the trumpets, take the aron, and God will destroy the walls. What ensues is a fascinating discussion in the Medrash as to what role this malach plays, and why the malach responds to Yeshua by saying, Atah bati, I have come now. What does the now here refer to? It's not really part of the general approach of the Shir. It's really tangential, but I want to share it with you because I think it's important, and you should just be aware of it. The Gemara in Megillah says about this encounter with this Malach that the Malach was saying to Yehoshua that the Malach was coming as a kind of almost the role of a Navi, to chastise Yehoshua. Emesh Amalo, the Malach says to him, Emesh Bitaltim Talmud Shaben Abayim Achshav Bitaltim Talmud Torah. Yesterday in your preparations for war, you were so busy with the preparations for war, you neglected the daily offering in the temple, and today your preparations for war have forced you to neglect the study of Torah. So Yehoshua says to Mamalo, Aleizem Embata, so which have you come to tell me, which have you come to criticize me for? Mamalo Atabati. That's how the Medrash weaves in the phrase Atabati. I have come now. Now meaning over the present issue, specifically over your preparations for war, which have taken you away from the Beis Medrash, if you will. Immediately, Miyad v'yalen Yeshua b'alai l'ru b'tocha emek om Rav Yochanan melamed shalan b'om kashal halacha. Passed from the next story, which is the Battle of Ai, Yeshua slept in the valley and the Gemara darshins that to mean that he slept in the valley of Torah. Without getting into the details of the Medrash per se, because that's not my topic, clearly what the Medrash is alluding to is the fact that the Noach comes to criticize Yehoshua for misplaced priorities. His priorities at this point should be spiritual priorities, sitting in the Beis Medrash, doing the Avodah in the Beis Hamikdash. What is he wasting his time for in engaging in the preparations for war? On this Medrash, the Radak says the following, in source number 8. V'yesh Bodrash. There is a homiletic interpretation of this encounter with the Malach, and he quotes this Gemara Megillah that I just quoted verbatim. V'zeh drash rachok. Says the Radak, this drash is very far from the pshat, the simple reading of the text. Ki ein shat ha-mechama sha'at Talmud Torah. Because the time of war is not the time for study in Torah, for the study of Torah. The people are in danger. People are on the battlefield. People are encamped in military formation, ready to go to war because their enemy is about to attack them. With the greatest of respect, says the Radak, that's not the time for encountering, for sitting in the Beis Medrash. That's the time to go out onto the battlefield and fight our enemies. And so the Radak dismisses this Medrash. But I heard from my Tanakh Rebbe of Yaakov Meidan many times his observation that in this particular case, the Gemara is probably closer to the Pshat. Because what was the Malach coming to tell Yehoshua? The Malach was coming to tell Yehoshua, Atabati, I have come now because Yericho is a different battlefield than the other cities in Israel. Yericho is a battlefield in which the battle will take place through the Aron HaKodesh, through the Kohanim, through the blowing of the trumpets, through the Gilui Shekhinah, the revelation of God's presence, through the fact that this is Admat Kodesh. Yericho is a battle which God will fight. Yeshua barely needs to lift a finger. Yericho is not Yeshua's battle to fight. And that's what the Malach is coming to tell him. Sar Tzva Hashem Atabati. I am the ministering angel of God's army. God commands an army. It's an army of Malachim. It's the same army of Malachim that saved Elisha. Or will save Elisha. That army will take out Yericho. Atabati, I have come now. Therefore, and to add one additional piece, says Rav Meidan suggests that that's the significance of the message to take off your shoes, because the shoes represent the army of a soldier, the uniform of a soldier. Not everybody in those days wore shoes, but soldiers in uniform always wore shoes. And when the Navi, when the Malach says to Yeshua, take off your shoes, it's the equivalent of saying, put down your gun. This battle you don't need to fight. This battle I will fight for you. And that's specific to the interpretation of the story of Yeshua. But what both of these stories represent is the fact that these malachim are there to assist us in the battlefield, to assist us in our campaign, to provide not just esoteric notion of providence, but actually malachim that would come and be commanded by Elisha, by the Navi, by instruction of the Sar Tzva Hashem. And there's no reason to assume, therefore, and come back to the story of Yaakov, that Yaakov didn't also, or on the contrary, phrase it in the positive. We can assume, therefore, that when Yaakov saw these malachim escorting him from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, or malachim coming to escort him from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, he understood that these were the malachim that were going to protect him on every front, including the military front, which, in the context of Esav, was a very important and significant part of the encounter. We can go all the way back to Shemot Perek Chaf Gimel, if you will, source number 9, which is the first place we have an explicit reference in the Torah to the notion that the conquest of Israel will be accompanied by a Malach who will help in that conquest, in that campaign. I will send the Malach to assist you in the and bring you into the land. And most of the Rishonim explained that that Malach is a reference to the Sar Tzva Hashem of which we just read, that met Yehoshua at the entrance to Yericho, and who fought the battle of Yericho for Yehoshua, and who then supported him and encountered him and helped him fight the rest of the battles of the conquest of Israel. I'm going to add one more additional source. There's a whole bunch of sources on the left-hand column of the page. I'm not going to read all of them. I just want to share with you one additional insight here. And that is that this idea that the Malachim form a kind of army that then assists and helps the army of Israel. And whenever we go into the battlefield, we do so with the notion of divine providence accompanying us or helping us, not in an esoteric sense or an abstract sense, but an actual fact together with the Malachim who march into the battlefield with us. This gives a whole new meaning to a phrase which appears throughout Tanakh, from Sefer Shmuel until the end of Tanakh, the notion of referring to God in Sefer Nevoah, is referring to God as Hashem Tzvaot. The first place we find the phrase Hashem Tzvaot is by Chana, in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel. And there it says, in source number 10, when Chana is praying for a child for the birth of Shmuel, V'atibon neta v'atama Hashem Tzvaot, imra'oti eb onia matecha, Hashem of hosts. What does Hashem Tzvaot mean? The word Tzvaot is the plural of the word Tzva. It's the plural of the word army. Tzvaot, therefore, means God. It's translated as God of hosts. God of armies. Host meaning referring to an army. So what does the meaning of referring to God as a God of armies? God of hosts. Hashem Tzvaot. What does the phrase mean? The first, so the Medrash already points out, the Gemara in Sechet Brachot, Miyom Shebara HaKadosh Baruch Hu Et Olamo Lo Haya Adam Shekva'ol HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tzva'ot Ad Sheba'ata Chana V'Kara'ato Tzva'ot. The phrase Hashem Tzva'ot was used by Chana, but the first time it's referred to is by Chana. And the Medrash thinks that that's significant enough to point out, to state, to articulate, that this was the beginning of the phrase Hashem Tzvaot. I think there's over 260 or 270 references in all of Tanakh to God as Hashem Tzvaot. It starts here. What does the word mean? God of armies. And so, a number of sources indicate, and I'll show you another one in source number 12, Sikta Abati, elaborates on what Chana meant when she said Hashem Tzvaot. Chana meant, Ribbono Shel Olam, Yesh Tzava Lamala V'Yesh Tzava Lamata. God, there are two armies. There's an army in the upper echelons, and there's an army down here. An army in upper worlds referred to army of Malachim. The army here refers to human beings. And she compares the two. Tzava Shel Mala, this particular context of the Medrash is not my issue, because we're not studying the story of Chana. And she compares the two for whatever reasons are relevant to her tefillah. But the notion here is that there's the notion of Hashem Tzvaot refers to the fact that these two armies work in tandem together. They operate together. The army of Israel and the army of the Malachim. And that's who the Ribbono Shel Olam commands. He commands Bnei Israel as Melech Malchei Malachim, and he commands his Malachim. And they operate together. So you, for example, you have phrases or references in source 13 and 14. You have references such as Hashem Yoshev al Kiso v'chol Tzva Hashemayim Omed Alav. God who sits on his throne and the army of the heavens, the hosts of heavens, stand with him. Or in Pasuk in Yeshayahu, V'aya b'yom ahu yifkod Hashem al Tzva Hamarom b'marom v'al Malchei Adama al Adama. God who commands the army on high, the army of angels, if you will, Bamarom in the heavens, and the army of earth on earth. You have reference, for example, source 17. Mize Melech HaKavod Hashem Izuz V'Gibor Hashem Gibor Milchama. God was the God of strength, a God who is the hero of battle, God of war. Hashem Yishmuchama, we say Chirat Hayah. Mize Melech HaKavod Hashem Tzvaot Melech HaKavod Tzela. Who is the king of glory, Hashem Tzvaot. And again, that reference to Hashem Kibbutz Mochama and Hashem Tzvaot. Why is all of this relevant? Because if I go back now to the story of Yaakov, what I have in the story of Yaakov is that Yaakov goes out to Laban, not with a dream of Malachim going up to heaven and coming down from heaven, not because he's dreaming of Malachim as if, I never quite understood what the role these Malachim played in this story. What was he dreaming about? He's dreaming about the Malachim because they are some sort of a symbolic gesture of protection, or they represent the closeness to God that you have in Eretz Yisrael versus the distance in Chutzot. What role do these Malachim play? When you understand the symbol, that the role that these Malachim, or Malachim, Tzar Tzva Hashem, Tzva Hashem, Hashem Tzvaot, the role that these Malachim play in the rest of Tanakh, you understand that these are the mechanisms, these are the angels that accompany Bnei Yisrael into the battlefield. And Yaakov understood that he was going into battle. Maybe not the same kind of battle that requires soldiers and guns and swords and spears, but when he's walking into the house of Laban, he's walking into enemy territory. And therefore he's going to need to engage Laban, and he's going to need to be protected from Laban. And he's losing the protection of the Malachim that he has in Eretz Yisrael, so he gains the Malachim that he has that will accompany him into Chutz La'aretz. And when he returns and he's going to greet Esav, he's going to greet Esav on the battlefront, on the battlefield. He's going to greet Esav, who's coming out to greet him with 400 men. That's an army. He's going to have to meet Esav with an army. And the Torah tells us that he does just that. He prepares to meet Esav with a Tzva Hashem, with a Machane Elokim, with an army, a camp of God, with an army of angels. This is the role that these Malachim play. They are the same Malachim that Yeshua sees when he sees Tzar Tzva Hashem, and the same Malachim that Elisha sees when he sees Sus Rechav Eish Saviv Elisha, horses and chariots of fire, and the same Malachim that the Torah says in Sefer Shemot and Perachav Gimel will accompany us into the conquest of Israel, and the same Malachim that the Navi refers to throughout Tanakh as Hashem Tzvaot, the Tzva Hashem, Tzva Marom B'Marom, V'Almachei Adama B'Adama. These are the Malachim that Yaakov encounters, and when he does encounter them, he describes them as Machane Elokim, the camp of God, the army, the military camp. I only add one more additional insight, possibly, to this story, and that is the beginning of next week's parasha. What does Yaakov do when he hears that Esav is coming out to meet him? First thing he does is he divides his camp. Source 18. Vayera Yaakov. There's a question that came in on the chat, but I'll deal with that in a moment. But there's a pasuk says Vayera Yaakov Ma'od. Yaakov was feared this encounter with Esav. Vayetzer lo. ויחץ את המחנה אשר איתו, ואת הצאן ואת הבקר והגמלים לשני מחנות. And he divides the people that were with him, and the sheep, and the cattle, and the camels, and he divides everything into two camps. ויאמר, and he says, אם יבוא עשיו על המחנה האחת ויקר, if Esav will come to the first camp and smite it, היה המחנה נשאר לפליטה. Then the remaining camp will survive. And again, he makes reference in Pasuk Yud to the fact that when he went to the house of Laban, he went with nothing, went with his makel, went with his stick, and now he's become Shnei Machanot. He's so powerful that he has become two camps. Who are these two camps? So traditionally, we understand that to mean that he took his people, he took his camels, he took his servants, and he took his family, and he divided them. Divide to protect. Meaning, and he says, if Esav will conquer one, then the other will survive. But if you think about it, who is he putting in the front lines and who is he putting in the back, in the rear lines? Is he going to divide his family that way? Who is he coming back with? He's coming back with his wives and his wives' maidservants, who are also his wives, and his children, and all of his cattle. Who is he dividing up? Is he going to put half his children in the first front and half his children in the rear? and by which selection criteria is he going to determine who's in the first camp and who's in the back, who's in the safer camp and who's not? The whole notion of dividing his camp is remarkably challenging from the ethics of it. Who is he dividing? Unless, again, this too I heard from Ahmedan, unless what he's dividing is not his family, but he's dividing the camp into the same two camps that he encountered on the way back from the house of Lavan. When he saw the Malachim, he saw the Machane Elokim, the camp of God, the camp of the angels. And immediately he named the place Machanaim, the double camp. So he has two camps. We said so at the end of the parasha this week. He has Machanaim. And the beginning of next week, he simply divides those same two camps. Who are those two camps? Rashi says it's the first camp is the camp of Malachi Chutzla, it's the left. Maybe that's not the pshat. Maybe the pshat is that he has his own camp, his own army, his own family, his own property. That's one camp. He's coming back to the land of Israel with everything that he owns. Machane Aleph. And then he encounters a second, namely the Malachim. And that's Machane Bet. That's the second camp. And so when you add the Malachim to his own, you get Machanaim, the double camp. When he has to divide them, he divides them over the same lines. And in the front lines, who does he put? The camp of the Malachim. The same camp that he sent to Asaph. Vayishlach Malachim Lefanav. And that group will encounter Asaph first. If Asaph conquers them, if Asaph is able to conquer the camp of angels, then Yaakov and his household will run, because there's not much left to talk about. But if Esav doesn't conquer them, then the second camp can encounter Esav and engage him. So that's another possible interpretation of that particular, the implication of the, what I'm suggesting, is that these malachim, which are malachim mamish, are in fact the same malachim that we encounter throughout Tanakh, that are there to protect, both in the battlefield and in the general sense, the entourage of God, the Tzva Hashem, that we refer to as Hashem. Now, somebody sent me a question in the chat box. What about the angels' interaction while Jacob was at Laban's house? Do they play the same role as you are suggesting now? I think the answer is yes, except that in Chutzlaret, Yaakov doesn't have an army. And he's not encountering Laban and playing Laban on the battlefield. But there's no question that he is in enemy territory and he needs protection. Of course, we know the story of the Lavan who comes out and kisses him in the Medrash that says that Lavan tried to kill him. Yaakov needs protection in the house of Lavan. But in Chutz Laaretz and alone and in exile, that protection will take on a different character, a different role. It'll be more in lines of just general divine providence, success against Lavan and all of Lavan's challenges. Maybe God is waging war for him in a strategic way. Maybe. I mean, but it's through these malachim. What I'm suggesting is that these malachim are the mechanism, the vehicle through which that providential assistance carries with Yaakov in his experience with Lavan. And when he comes back to Eretz Yisrael, another group of malachim come, and they, in Eretz Yisrael, as Yaakov begins to build his army, they take on the status of what we would refer to as Tzva Hamarom Bamarom. And they, together with the army of Israel, combine to refer to be known as the Tzva'ot, and Hashem as Hashem Tzva'ot. And I'm going to end this shiur with a tefillah that the Ben Shalom's Malachim and the Tzva Hashem that has protected the army of Israel and fought side by side with the army of Israel in all of its previous campaigns, both in Tanakh and modern times, continue to do so, and that the army of Israel continue to have only the success of the accompaniment of Tzva Hashem along its side. And with that, we will conclude. If there are any questions, we'll be happy to take questions.
Thank you very much, Ramosha.
Rabbi Kelman, pleasure to see you.
Thank you. How are you? Yasher
Koach. Baruch Hashem. I see a number of familiar names and faces. Well, I don't know about faces. There aren't too many faces. There's a couple. But familiar names and faces, and it's really a wonderful opportunity to get together again. And thank you for all of the people I don't know personally, but thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the exchange.